Okay, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. And last week we left off with the Gemara that states on Gimel Amudeis that the Gemara recommended that in a situation where a woman who's never been married before, so the halakha states that if for the first time she's getting married, the Mishnah writes that she has to get married on Wednesday. And therefore, the halakha is that anyone who gets married on Wednesday, the Roman general said they would have to live with her beforehand. Halakha l'maisa. And therefore, we find that there was an Isser, and the Chamim recommended the Ledrishlu da Onishari. The Chamim recommended that the woman should know that if she lives with her husband, that's fine, but if she lives with the Roman general under duress, it is considered to be permissible. The Ledrishlu da Onishari. That's the halacha. And therefore, they should know that if they live with the Roman general, they're not doing it out of their free will. They're doing it out of coercion. And therefore, the halakha is that it's considered to be permissible. And we dealt with last week the following. And we'll continue from where we left off. That Rabbeinu Tam was bothered by a question. We know that there are three cardinal sins. That if someone puts a gun to someone's head and says that I want you to commit the following three averas, you have to let yourself be killed and not commit those three averas, even in a private form. Those are adultery, idolatry, and murder. Those three sins, if a person is threatened to do, you have to give up your life and let yourself be killed by the person that's threatening your life. All the other averas, we mentioned that it's a public form in front of 10 Jews, so the halakha is that you have to let yourself be killed if you are going to commit the sin in public. If someone threatens you to eat a ham sandwich in front of 10 Jews, so you have to let yourself be killed because that's considered to be a chil Hashem. But the three cardinal sins even apply in a private forum, and every three of those cardinal sins, each one has a subcategory. For example, we know that embarrassing someone in public is tantamount to murder. And therefore, since it's tantamount to murder, the halakha is that we assume that if someone threatens myself to embarrass someone in public, I have to let myself be killed and not embarrass that person in public. That's a subcategory of murder. That's what Tosfos writes in Sota and Daf Yudim Beis, and the Rabbeinu Yonah writes in the Shari Tshuva. A subcategory of idolatry is what we call Atze Asherah. What is Atze Asherah? Atze Asherah means you're not allowed to bow down to an idol, that a tree that is served. But let's say I want to take the bark and make a pill, a medicinal type of benefit that I will derive from the tree, even though I'm not bowing down to the tree, but my deriving benefit is a subcategory of avodah zarah, and I would have to let myself be killed in such a case. And the third avera that we have is the avera that we find, which is called adultery, and that is also has a subcategory the Gemara writes, where someone is threatened to have one's life destroyed, and you have to give up your life. But the Gemara gives a case where someone had some type of emotional disease, where he had to speak to a woman who was not dressed properly behind a fence, and the Gemara writes that he would derive some type of benefit from that. He had some type of emotional disease, and the Gemara says that he has to let himself be killed rather than to engage in this process. And the Gemara has two opinions whether she's a married woman or a single woman. If she's a married woman, that's considered to be tantamount because she's not married to this man, and he would be committing a subcategory, an abizrayu, a subcategory of Gila Rais. He has to let himself be killed. And if she's a single woman, he also has to let himself be killed. The Gemara writes because it's pagam mishpacha, because she is defaming the family. She is defaming the family that she comes from by engaging in this, speaking with this man behind the fence without any clothes properly dressed. And therefore, because of perhaps is embarrassing her family, which maybe will fall under the rubric of embarrassing them in public, and therefore it is murder, therefore she has to let herself be killed. And he has to, rather, let himself be killed and not engage in this type of what? Because he, in a sense, is defaming He, rather, is defaming her family, and therefore he has to let himself be killed. So these three cardinal sins have subcategories built upon them that you have to let yourself be killed, and that is the halacha of Yehareg Va'al Yavor. And therefore, the question is very obvious in our Gemara: how could the Chachamim have recommended that these women can, in fact, live under duress with a Roman general? Isn't that considered to be Gili Arayis by living with such a man, even though he's non-Jewish? So Rabbeinu Tam postulated the following theory, and that is, by living with a non-Jewish man is considered to be tantamount to living with an animal. And therefore, since living with a non-Jewish man is considered to be living with an animal, therefore we do not invoke the important principle of echel abal, echel abol, meaning that if a Jewish woman is married to a Jewish man and she commits adultery with another Jewish man, she becomes prohibited to her husband. Her husband must divorce her and she loses her ksuba. Not only that, she becomes prohibited to the man she committed adultery with for the rest of her life, and he never can go ahead and marry her even after they get divorced. She is usher to the man she married. She is usher to the man she committed adultery with. However, when it comes to a non-Jew who she committed adultery with, that is tantamount to an animal, and therefore, in the event that she gets divorced and loses her ksuba from her husband, the halacha is that if they get together again, the non-Jewish man she committed adultery with converts, and she obviously becomes a balas tshuva because she did a terrible aveira, they come together, they can get remarried. They can get remarried. Why can they get remarried? Why do we say that she's prohibited to the man that she committed adultery with? The answer is because he's a non-Jew. Either because he converted, the Ritva says, Girish and Iskaris Kikut and Shanola dummy, he's like a new man, and therefore we don't invoke the notion of Echel Abal, Echel Abal, or either according to the Rush, who stated that the only time you said Echel Abal, Echel Abal is a situation where that man would have been permissible to this Jewish woman who is married. If it wasn't for the fact that she was married to man A, she could have married man B, because man B was Jewish. But a non-Jew or Jewish woman is never married to. A non-Jew or Jewish woman is never married to. So a non-Jew, she can never marry this non-Jewish man. So therefore, even if she wanted to marry the non-Jewish man, she couldn't, because he was a non-Jewish man. He's a goy. And therefore, since he's a non-Jewish man, we cannot invoke the principle of Echel Abal, Echel Abal, because there was a prohibition anyway. Meaning to say, we said the notion of intermarriage with a non-Jewish man is tantamount to be considered not a chefs of Ishus. In order to invoke the concept of Echel Abal, Echel Abal being prohibited, you have to be able to say, that we're talking about ishus of Jewish people, between Jew and Jew. If you're dealing with an intermarriage, that's not called marriage. And if it's not called marriage, you cannot invoke the principle of echel abal, echel abal. And therefore, Rabbeinu Tam's psak emerges correct.
But how do you invite ishus? Otherwise, she would not be a sort of a bala.
Well, that's what we mentioned last week. That was the last thing that we mentioned, that within Rabbeinu Tam there are two opinions in Rishonim. The Rivam understood Rabbeinu Tam and the Tumasa, and we find the Tais Rishonim and the Miri, that when the Rabbeinu Tam says that a Jewish woman that's married to a Jewish man that commits adultery with a non-Jewish man, not only is she permissible to the non-Jewish man, she also remains permissible to her husband. She also remains permissible to her husband. That was one mahalach we had in Rabbeinu Tam. There was another version of Rabbeinu Tam they had of the Trumas Adetshin, which is you make a split, that she becomes prohibited to her husband, but she will remain permissible to the adulterer if in the event he converts. So you have a split within Rabbeinu Tam.
In that scenario, there's a
mighty
ishus between the
non-Jew
and the
Jewish,
as opposed to a
mighty bia. No, there's never going to be an ishus by an intermarriage. No, but we don't recognize that. We don't recognize that in Ishus.
Well, you recognize it not to offer her to her husband according to that day.
Right, okay, but it's not going to impinge upon the non-Jewish man. That's Rabbeinu Tam's theory. Right, okay, but regarding the non-Jewish man himself, the boa, it won't impinge upon. That's clear. The questions will impinge upon the husband. So that's where the Rabbeinu Tam, we had two different approaches. You're absolutely right. So we had two different approaches within Rabbeinu Tam. how to understand the Rabbeinu Tam, halacha l'maisa. Okay. So we left off in the following, and that is that not everyone agrees with the Rabbeinu Tam. We left off with the Rabbeinu Tam, and the Rivan, who's quoted by our Tosfos, argues on the Rabbeinu Tam. And the Rivan writes, it's not true. What's not true? The Rivan writes that we don't classify living with a non-Jewish man as living with an animal. In fact, if a Jewish woman who's married to a Jewish man lives with a non-Jewish man, she is prohibited to that non-Jewish man. In the event he converts, she'll never be able to marry him ever, ever. We do invoke Echel Labal to Echel Labal. We absolutely do. Not only does she become prohibited to her, what the Rivan writes is that certainly, and this is what we will want to mention and stress, the Rivan assumed that Rabbeinu Tam held that not only is she permissible to the Boel, she's permissible to her husband. I mean, according to Rabbeinu Tam, we classify living with a non-Jewish man as living with an animal. And therefore, it does nothing. She's considered to be still permissible to her husband. He doesn't have to divorce her. She doesn't lose her ksuba. She did do something wrong. She did an isser. But it does not impinge upon her marriage. And in the event that she gets divorced, she becomes a widow later in life and wants to marry the non-Jew who converts, that's fine too. That's the way the Rivam understood Rabbeinu Tam. Comes the Rivam and says, what's going on here? I'll quote you three Gemaras that will state explicitly. The Rivam states three Gemaras that state explicitly that if a Jewish woman who's married lives with a non-Jewish man, she becomes prohibited to her husband. Number one Gemara. Our Gemara states that immodest women, if they go ahead and live with the Roman general willingly, will become prohibited to their husbands. One question from our direct Gemara, the Gemara seems to say. Number two Gemara, the Gemara later on in Subas on Chavav Mebez writes that if a woman is captured by non-Jews, a Jewish woman who's married, we assume she'll end up living willingly with her captors, and she becomes prohibited to her husband. What do you do with that, Gemara? According to Rabbeinu Tam, she's still permissible to her husband. Number three, what do we assume? We assume it was done willingly. That's what the Gemara assumes. That the captors will convince her she's living with the captors, and they'll end up doing it willingly. That's what we assume. That's what the Gemara says. Well, not always. Maybe in the beginning it will be a rape situation, but eventually the Gemara says it will be done baratzon. And the third Gemara that the Gemara says explicitly is the notion of Mordechai and Esther. The Gemara says in Megillah on Dr. Gimel Manaf that they were married. Now the Ramban and the Baal HaMor, both in Sanhedrin, state explicitly that not everyone agrees to this, that they were married. But the Gemara states that they were considered to be married, and the Gemara says two blot later in Megillah on Ted Vav Manaf that Esther was bemoaning to Mordechai, she's going to have to live eventually willingly with Ahasuerosh, and that will make her prohibited to Mordechai. So you see from those three Gemaras that living with a non-Jewish man makes you prohibited to your husband. And the Rabbeinu Tam, the way the Rivam understood him, meant to say that living with a non-Jewish man was like living with an animal. So therefore you still remain permissible to your what? To your husband. I'm sorry? Yeah. Oh, very good. Okay, you're absolutely right. That's what he's assuming. That's what he's assuming. So we have to try to answer these three Gemaras. Okay, we have to try to answer these three Gemaras.
You're not forced to learn the Rivan that way. You can learn the Rivan held that Rabbeinu Tam held that she was still a sort of Bala, and the Rivan was bothered by the fact that how could she ask the Bala, according to you, Rabbeinu Tam, if it's not a Mike Kadia?
No. He was assuming. Otherwise, what's the questions of the Gemara? He's proving from all those three Gemaras that she's prohibited to her husband.
That's right. But Rabbeinu Tam agrees with that.
No, we said there's two. We said there are two versions within Rabbeinu Tam. No, it's clear that even though the Tulsa doesn't elucidate that, that was the Rivam's understanding. Otherwise, you don't have a kasha.
Who's being owed to her husband if you think it's a mighty deal to Hamas? That's the question I was asking.
Right, but the I understand that. But the assumption is, the simplest understanding is that he understood that the Rabbeinu Tam held that not only is she permissible to the Baal, she's permissible to her husband as well. Why? Yeah, I understand, but if you assume Rabbeinu Tam, we learn, like the Tosis, if you learn them, you can make a split, like the Tumas Adashin, that she is also a Baal, and the Kasha doesn't start. He agrees with that. No. It's clear from Tosis, you see that he understood that Rabbeinu Tam held. Otherwise, the Gemara's aren't Kashas. He would agree with that. That's in fact one of the reasons why these three Gemaras would say you make a split with Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam would agree to the split, that she's prohibited to her husband, but she's going to be permissible to the Baal in the event he converts. Alright, so what do we do with these three Gemaras? So what you have to say with these three Gemaras is the following. Number one, you could say, you start with the first Gemara, which is our Gemara, is that the Gemara never said that the immodest woman will end up living willingly with her what? With her husband. Okay? The Gemara never said that she would become prohibited to her husband if she lives willingly with the Roman general. The Gemara, all it's saying is that there's an isser that will be done. If she lives willingly with the Roman general, she's doing something wrong. But the Gemara never once said, if you saw the Gemara, when we saw the Gemara never once said that that would prohibit her to her husband. If she ended up doing it willingly with the Roman general, that's a wrong thing. She does an isser. But the Gemara never once said that Pharaoh's black on white, that would make her prohibited to her husband. Not once did it say it. So that's how Rabbeinu Tam would respond to that Gemara. Our Gemara never said that. Our Gemara said it was prohibited. The Gemara never said it would generate a prohibition. Number two, Gemara. You could explain the Gemara about the woman that was captured. It's talking about a Kohen. The Gemara doesn't say it explicitly on Chafav, but a Kohen. Wife, a Kohen's wife that lives with a non-Jewish man. God forbid, the Kohen's wife is raped by a non-Jewish man. He has to divorce her because she becomes a zona. And halakhically, she becomes a zona because she lived with a man she couldn't marry. And a Kohen cannot marry a zona. A Yisrael and Levi could marry a zona. But a Kohen cannot marry a zona. And therefore, that Gemara that says the woman is captured, She ends up living willingly with the non-Jews. She becomes a Surah Labala. Doesn't necessarily have to be talking about Israel and Levi. It's talking about a what? It's talking about a Kohen. A Kohen special did. So you can explain away that Gemara. Yeah, go ahead.
So when he's Mishgayer, how do we apply it? That's right. If Mishgayer, then how do we apply it to the Baal of the Baal?
Meaning the case of a Kohen?
Correct.
Right, so you mean could he marry her?
Correct.
According to the way we're understanding, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. The Kohen, though, can never stay with a woman that lives with a non-Jewish. That's why if a Kohen is going out with a woman that he wants to marry, and she's a Baal Shuvah, he has to know as to whether she never lived with a non-Jewish man. Okay? What do we do with the third Gemara?
Even during the marriage.
God forbid if she would be raped, he would have to divorce her. Terrible, terrible case. Okay, so that's the. What do we do with the third Gemara? The third Gemara was regarding Esther. So you could say one of two things. Number one, like the Baal Mor Rabban could say, we argue on that we don't take that drasha seriously, and we say they never really were married. Or number two, you could say that what she meant to say to Mordechai was that, strictly speaking, halakhically, even if she lived willingly with Achashverosh, she would remain permissible to Mordechai, but Mordechai maybe would not be interested in staying with her because she would be defamed by living with a non-Jewish man willingly. So that's what she meant, avadati, avadati. Not from a halakhic perspective, but from an emotional perspective, she was assuming that Mordechai would not want to stay with her. But halakhically, she could. So we have just defended Rabbeinu Tam's opinion, where Rabbeinu Tam holds halacha lemaisa. Very importantly, Rabbeinu Tam holds that we assume Bias Akamas Kabias Abahema, Jewish woman lives with a non-Jewish man, she remains permissible to her husband, and she remains permissible to the Boel, the non-Jewish man, if in the event she gets divorced and becomes a widow, and he converts, he can marry her. And we defended him with all these three Gemaras. Oh. This is Rabbeinu Tam Shita. Now, the truth of the matter is, if we try to understand the Rabbeinu Tam is really based on a Pasuk in Yecheskel, where the Pasuk in Yecheskel clearly writes, Apkar Lazari Dimitri, that the Torah compares the seed of a non-Jewish man like a horse, the Navi in Yecheskel. And therefore, what it's saying is that he's mamish like a behemoth. Rabbeinu Tam took that drasha so seriously, we consider him to be mamish like a behemoth. And the halacha is, we should mention, that if someone would take a gun to someone's head and threaten someone to live with a behemoth, that's not considered to be Gilui Arayos. It's a terrible issur, but you don't have to say Yarav Vayavar. You don't have to give up your life. It's a terrible issur. It is an issur in the Torah. It's considered to be an error, but it's not Gilui Arayos that you would say Yeh Hareg Va'al Yavor. So Rabbeinu Tam took that pasuk in Yecheskel very, very, very seriously. When the Torah compares non-Jewish seed to a horse, it's mamish like a behemoth. And the Rivam argued. Rivam said, no way. Living with a non-Jewish man is a terrible prohibition, and it creates a prohibition labal, it creates a prohibition laboel, and he says it explicitly. He says explicitly, Amal gabe vayla lochai shiva bilis mitzri kibiyat zamema vuadin laboel. That if she lives with a non-Jewish man, she's prohibited to her husband, she's prohibited to his boa. What do you do with the pasuk in Yecheskel, though? So he comes up with a new halacha, and he says all it means to say is that there is no yuchsin within non-Jews. There is no yuchsin within non-Jews. Now what does that mean? That means, the Gemara tells us in Yevamos, Adaf Sarichetz Amar Aleph, it tells us the din, halacha l'maisa, of Ein Av L'Mitzri. What does Ein Av L'Mitzri mean? It means the following. A non-Jewish man lives with a Jewish woman. I'm sorry. A non-Jewish man lives with a non-Jewish woman and they conceive. During her pregnancy, she converts. The halacha is those kids that are born are Jewish from birth. Because when the mother gave birth, she was Jewish. The father, though, is not considered to be their halachic father. Ein av l'mitzri. Ein av l'mitzri. Now, the halacha certainly is, and this is the chiddush, we know that if a non-Jewish man would marry a Jewish woman, they would intermarry, obviously, then we know that the child is Jewish, we follow the mother, it's a machlokas and tanoim, we follow the mother. They're different. It's a machlokes tanoim. Do you follow the mother? Do you follow the father? Halacha l'maaseh. But we paskin that you truly follow the mother. So in this case, what emerges is that there is no relationship of yuchsin for purposes of Yerusha. Let's say the father would die. Would that son inherit his father? No. He would not inherit his father. That's the chiddush of this halacha. These children are considered to be Jewish only from the mother, and they have no halachic relationship with their father. And that's all the Pasuk in Navi told us, that they're considered to be like horses, the non-Jewish man. Their seed is like horses. Then in the event you would have this case, there is no connection between the father and the son. And therefore the son is not yours, the father. Ein lo chayis is a lashon of Tosfos. There is no trace of Yerusha at all. There is no connection as inheritance. Now, this is interesting,
so
because there is. I mean, from a strictly speaking, no. But you know, as I mentioned, he's not his halachic father. Absolutely not. Now, what is interesting is, as the Gemara writes in Kedushin, let's say you have a non-Jewish family, a Goyish family. The Gemara writes in Kedushin adopted Zion Amaral that the son is Yorish, his father. The son inherits his father. It says Goy Aviv, Goy Yorish is Aviv Dvar Torah. A non-Jewish son can be Yorish and inherit his father on a Diraisa level. So you mean that this Gemara Rivamus is arguing? It could very well be that according to the Rivam, if you view that the seed of a non-Jewish man is like a horse, maybe there's no trace at all. Unless you say the following, that if there's a non-Jewish family straight up, then there is Yerusha. There is a trace of lineage to inherit each other. But once you try to mix the marriage with Judaism, with the Jewish woman, there is no connection between the father and the Jewish children. And therefore, where you have this try of assimilation, the halacha states they're considered to be like a horse, and there is no lineage, there is no inheritance that is passed down from a non-Jewish father to a Jewish child that was mothered through a Jewish mother, that was conceived through a Jewish mother. So that's the halacha that we find. Okay? That's the halacha that we find, that's how the Rivam will explain away this pasuk in Yechezkel. That we treat the seed of a non-Jewish man like what? Like a horse. The question is, to what extreme do you take it? Rabbi Yochanan took it to extreme. He classified it as a behemoth, living with an animal. Says the Rivam, no, it's just a very small halacha regarding Yerusha. And in this one case, where the mother conceived while she was non-Jewish and converted in the middle of the pregnancy and gave birth while she's Jewish, and we say ain av l'mitzri. That's the finish. So you have this very important machlokes Rabbeinu Tam in the Rivam, and we paskin in the Shulchan Aruch like Rabbeinu Tam. We paskin in the Shulchan Aruch like Rabbeinu Tam that if God forbid a woman who is married, Jewish woman is married, commits adultery with a non-Jewish man. So the halacha is that in the event later on in life that she becomes a widow or she gets divorced and the non-Jewish man will convert, the halacha is that she can, C-A-N, she can marry this man. We say bias akum is to bias abahema halacha lamaisa. Now, on the second point, does she still remain permissible to her husband? Does she still remain permissible to her husband? Simplest understanding is yes, she still remains permissible to her husband as well. So it seems like we possibly like Rabbeinu Tam completely lakula. That not only will she remain permissible to the Boel in the event later in life that he converts, but she'll still also remain permissible to her husband. So that's the category of Bias Akum. Yeah, go ahead, Akiva.
Even in a ray?
Even in a ray. We mean even. Of course in a ray. Not in the case of a Kohen, we're talking about Israel lady. In a case of, even of course in a case of a ray. We're talking about a case maybe even she does it willingly.
And a Kohen
because she becomes a Zonah. Cohen has to divorce her, even in a rape. Terrible, terrible case, but that's the deal. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. Yes.
He is not permitted to inherit, or he has no claim?
No, we don't give him the land. I mean, if you want to give a gift before you die, you can.
I think the father does will it to give it.
He has to write a special condition. But if there was no special condition in a will, he has no claim to the land. Absolutely not. You can gift land to anyone you want if you write a special condition before one dies. We're talking about a case where everything's equal. There was no special condition. Absolutely. Okay. Let's mention also, before we get into the details, there really are two topics that emerge here. So we basically finished the Bias Akum. There are a few other subcategories we have to get to, and then there's a whole other topic of Kiddush Hashem, which we'll try to get to tonight. If not, then Hashem will get to next week. There is a machlokas, the Baal Amor and the Ramban, that I wanted to mention in Sanhedrin regarding the Shlosh Averis. There's an interesting machlokas regarding this din of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol. What does that mean? Let's say someone takes a gun to my head and says, I want you to cause someone to stumble in the Avera of Avodah Zarah. I want you to get someone involved in idolatry. And he threatens my life. If I don't do it, he's going to shoot me. We know there's a halacha of lifnei iver lo sitei michshol. I'm never allowed to cause someone to stumble in halacha. And in fact, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Bavel and Beis, does not interpret that pasuk literally. It's a halachic understanding. I'm not allowed to give a cup of wine to a Nazarite. I'm not allowed to give Eiver Min Achai to a non-Jew, because that's one of the Shevet Mitzvah Noach. I'm not allowed to cause someone to stumble in halacha. I'm not allowed to give a cup of water to someone who's not going to say a bracha. Now, if it's someone who doesn't know any halacha, I shouldn't embarrass him. Maybe I should teach him. But if you know that the person knows and he's not going to say a bracha, then you should put the cup of water on the table or on the desk and let him pick it up himself. rather than you give it to him directly, it says in Shulchan to makshul him in the bracha. That's lifnei iver lo sitein mikshul. And it's considered to be only nisid yoraisa, according to the Gemara and Tosfos, where it's trei aved denara. He's on one side of the river, and I'm on the other side. And on his side of the river, he cannot get any wine. There is no liquor store. I am enabling him to what? To give him the wine. And therefore, that's the issur d'oraisa of lifnei iver. If we're on the same side of the street, same side of the river, and he can go down to a local liquor store, and I just give it to him in my home, I transgress a rabbinic issur of nisayel over aveir. That's the halacha of lifnei iver lo sitein mikshul. In fact, the Minchas Chinuch has a suffix. If I actually put a chair in front of a blind man and he trips, am I over the issur d'oraisa? That's the simplest understanding of the pasuk. Lifnei iver, before a blind man, don't put a stumbling block. What happens if I do that? See, the Gemara interprets it on a halachic level, that I cause someone to stumble in halacha. But what happens if I literally put the chair in front of the blind man? So the Minchas Chinuch has a suffix. But there is a Yad Ramah, and the notes point this out of Bava Basra, that the makor of the Isser of Archakas Nezikin, what's the source that I'm not allowed to make a fire, let's say, burn my leaves in my backyard, cause smoke, and will do damage to my neighbor's home? What's the makor in the Torah I'm not allowed to do that? Either V'aftel Recha Kamocha, you wouldn't do that to your own house, or Lifneiva L'Sitin Mishol. So you see the Yad Ramah, the great Rishon, is using that pasuk as a source for not damaging someone, even though it's in an indirect fashion. So certainly if I put a what chair in front of a blind man, that's certainly going to be prohibited according to the Yad Ramah. Okay. So with that background now, I was threatened with my life that I have to cause someone to be engaged in Avodah Zarah, to bring him involved in Christianity, let's say. We assume that that's Avodah Zarah. Okay? That's a machlokas Ramam and Tosfos. Rambam Rabbeinu Tam, the Christianity is considered to be idolatry at all. The Rambam writes, in fact, that it is, and the Rabbeinu Tam, that Tosfos quotes in Bechoros on Beis and Beis, Mesechus Bechoros and in Sanhedrin, Samach Alpha and Beis, says that Christianity is only a shutfus. It's a partnership. It's a partnership. But they really believe Hashem is in control. The Trinity is only considered to be a shutfus. So it's not a real Avodah Zarah. So the Gedolei Achronim point out that Minchas Chinuch and the Chasam Sofer and the Rebbeinu said that machlokas is only for non-Jews. That machlokas between the Rebbeinu Tam and the Rambam is for non-Jews. A non-Jewish man to be a Christian, is he over one of the seven mitzvot Noach of being engaged in a Christianity? Machlokas Rebbeinu Tam and the Rambam. But for a Jew to engage in Christianity, everyone agrees that that's Avodah Zarah. So my life is threatened to cause a Jew to be involved in Christianity. That's lifnei iver about Avodah Zarah. Do I have to let myself be killed? What would you say? It's not real Avodah Zarah, because I'm not doing Avodah Zarah, but I'm causing someone to be engaged in Avodah Zarah. So what would we say? Oh, so it's a machlokas, the Balamor and the Rabban in Sanhedrin. What's a machlokas? The machlokas in the Balamor and the Rabban is exactly this point. The machlokas is, how do I view lifnei iver lo sitein mikshul? When I cause my friend to be engaged in Christianity, do we assume that that's considered to be a lav kloli or a lav prati? Is that subsumed under the Avodah Zarah? And therefore I treat it as if I'm engaged in the enterprise of Avodah Zarah, I'd have to give up my life.
It's like a subcategory.
Absolutely, like an Abbas right. Or do you say no, that lifnei iver does not become subsumed under the Aveira that I'm causing someone to stumble in? It's a general prohibition. I cannot cause people to stumble in Aveiras. Granted, this is one of the three cardinal ones, but I'm not doing it. He's the one that's going to be doing it. So if you say that, then I would not have to give up my life. That's a fundamental machlokes Balamor and the Ramban. Fundamental machlokes Balamor and Ramban. As to whether how you view lifnei iver lo sitein mikshul. Is that called a lav in general? Or does it become subsumed under the sin that I'm causing someone to stumble in? Another example, before we move on to a more of a subcategory of Bias Akum. Another example. Tosus in Sanhedrin of Samachal from the Beis writes on the top of the Yomun, what happened with Haman? Mordechai refused to bow down to Haman. Now, was that considered to be real about Avodah Zarah? He risked his life. He refused to. Was that a real about Avodah Zarah? The Gemara writes, if you serve an Avodah Zarah out of Ava, or out of Yira, out of love or fear, you're putter. Why is it Why is it that he seemed to what? Risk his life. So there is a machlokis, the Ran and the Rashba. What about Mar Sinai and Avodah Zarah? What about Mar Sinai and Avodah Zarah? What's the halacha if someone is engaged in Mar Sinai and Avodah Zarah? Someone, let's say, for example, throws down a ring and asks me to pick it up in front of a group of people. And right in front of the ring is an idol. By me bending down to pick up the ring, it looks like I'm bowing down to the idol. Would I have to give up my life? It's Mar Sinai. It looks like I'm doing it, even though I'm not doing it.
Was that head of sense? Was that head of sense? No?
Well, they refused to be engaged in that. Similar, absolutely. Yeah, similar to Gemara and Gittin. Very excellent, right? That's that Gemara and Gittin. So would you assume that Mar Sinai out of Avodah Zarah? What's the deal? It's the same question. Do we assume that Mar Sinai, which means looking like you're doing an aveir, but you're really not, does that become subsumed on the aveir you're doing? Therefore, I have to give up my life. Or do you say no? It's a general din not to make it look like you're doing an aveir, but it doesn't become subsumed. That's a machlokas rash ben Aram. And according to one shot in Tais and Sanhedrin, maybe that's why Mordechai refused to bow down to Haman, even though it wouldn't have been avodah zarah, but it might have looked to people that he was bowing down to him and deifying him, and therefore he refused to engage in such a process. Could be.
What's the onus for Mar Sinai? Does it depend on the Avera, or is it always the same money?
Well, that's a no. Mar Sinai is a general issue. It's not going to be one of the other nieces. But we're saying here, if it's involved with the three cardinal sins, maybe it's become subsumed under those three cardinal sins.
Well,
you have to give up your life.
Question,
no, but that's not a few nieces basin. Yahweh Bal Yahweh, you have to remember, because I'm just letting myself be killed by someone. David never punishes someone on Mar Sinai. Only certain Averas are given out nieces basin. No, Mar Sinai's an Isser, but Beis Din doesn't punish.
So
yeah.
So
but that's the Kiddush we're saying. That's by general dinner, but there's a special halacha about the three cardinal sins that I have to give up my life. So it could be if I'm engaged in Mar Sinai by these three cardinal sins, and we know there's a concept of a subcategory of Avazrayu, and therefore the halacha is that I would have to give up my life. Another example of that, a machlokes the Rambam and the Ramban. Let's say, for example, a person, Lagabi Gili or Raya, doesn't engage in actual living with a woman, but he engages in other things, L'shem Hana, for physical benefit, deriving benefit. So according to the Rambam, you have to give up your life. That's the Rambam that's in it, against the Ramban. The Ramban writes only living together is considered to be what? A din of Yare Vayavar. But if someone takes a gun to my head, according to the Rambam, and says you must engage in Chibuk and Nishuk, then you have to give up your life, according to the Rambam. And the Chafetz Chaim says that we paskin like the Rambam. We paskin like the Rambam. And that's a very important question regarding the prohibition of needed, the isser of a needed. When a woman is in the state of being a needed, do we treat her like an erva? The Rambam says yes, and the Rabbeinu Tam says no. And we're machmir for the Rambam's opinion that a woman is treated like a needed, is treated like an erva. And if a man engages for the same benefit, even not living with her, but in Chibuk and Nishuk, he would have to give up his life. Someone would take a gun to my head and say to engage in Chibuk and Nishuk with a woman, with a married woman, even his wife, that is a needed, you have to give up your life. Yahweh Bal Yahweh. The Chafetz Chaim says we possibly have to. Now that's if you're trying to engage benefit. If he's just, let's say, not engaging in benefit, let's say shaking her hand and not trying to engage in benefit, so that's a different Shiloh, but that's certainly not a Yahweh Bal Yahweh Shiloh. He's doing L'shem Hana for benefit purposes. Okay. Yes.
On the other side would be the same far, but when you say that every mitzvah, if I'm worried with having a mitzvah, I have to have the mercy somewhere else. And one of the stuff it is
the Arvis. Rashi says in Rosh Hashanah.
In other words, I've never been fully mekayim in this mitzvah.
Right. If there's some Jew on the other end of the earth that hasn't done the mitzvah.
That's the same idea of Mitzvah Yiva. Mitzvah Yiva means part of each mitzvah is to make sure that no one else does it. If I help another person,
that's
my, I'm part of that.
Okay, that's one possibility, absolutely. But you could have argued it's a general din.
Right.
I hear you. Interesting. You know, you should know, it's a very good, excellent point you're making. The whole notion of Arvis, that every Jew is responsible for another Jew. Let's say on Rosh Hashanah, if I heard the shofar in the morning, why am I able to later on in the afternoon to go to the hospital and blow shofar for people in the hospital? Exactly, you said. Because every Jew is responsible for another Jew. Apopishiyotze. Even though I was yotze in the morning, I can be motzi others later on in the afternoon. Where's the makor and shasta of arvus for averus? Rashi and the Rishonim extended it to mitzvahs. But the notion of kol yisrael arim zebezeh is that the fact that I didn't rebuke my friend or help my friend out to stop him from doing the avera, or helping him out to get him out of that avera. So the Gemara in Shas in Sanhedrin on Mem Gimel, Chof Tes in Mem Gimel, which is the Makar of Arvis, is only mentioned by Averis. The Rishonim Chiddush is they extended to mitzvahs. Exactly like you say. And the Fever certainly in Avera. Okay. It's an excellent, excellent point. Okay. Now, let's move to the next subcategory regarding Bias Akum before we can even get to the Gimel of Eretz, which I don't know if we'll get to this week, we'll have to get to next week. There is a very important halakha regarding intermarriage and Bias Akum, and that is the halakha called Kenoyim Pogim Bo. This is a Mishnah in Sanhedrin on Tebeis and Mebeis. Okay? The Torah tells us the story that Zimri, the head of the Shevet of Shimon, lives with Cosby, a non-Jewish woman, and Pinchas kills them both. And the Mishnah writes, this is called Kenoyim Pogimbo. Boel Aramis Kenoyim Pogimbo. Okay? This was a case with a Jewish man living with a non-Jewish woman, which I want you to keep in mind is the reverse of our Gemara. Our Gemara had a Jewish woman living with a non-Jewish man. The Torah presents the opposite. And the Torah says, you have Pinchas has a mandate, he's able to go ahead and destroy them and kill them. Okay. That's all halacha. Kenoyim Pogimbo. The Gemara writes that if Zimri would have turned around and killed Pinchas, he would have been potter because Pinchas was a rodev. Pinchas was pursuing him, and if someone's running after me with a gun, I can turn around and defend myself and kill him, and I am exempt. Okay. Now this halacha, we should know, of Kenoyim Pogimbo is found in three different cases. The three cases are the following. Number one, Gonev et HaKisba. If you see someone stealing the Kli Sharis in the Beis HaMikdash, the Kli Sharis was the Kli that imbued Kedusha, the vessel, to other vessels in the Beis HaMikdash. If you would have a man that would steal it, pickpocket, he would go ahead and steal the clay. He says, he's got it. You see someone stealing the clay sharis, you can kill him on the spot. Halacha l'moshe misina. Unbelievable. Then the Gemara Mishnah says, if you see someone cursing someone with black magic, mekalel b'kosen, if you see a person doing that, you can kill him on the spot. And the third one is a Jewish man living with a non-Jewish woman. Now, it's very interesting that the Jewish man living with a non-Jewish woman only applies in front of 10 Jews. Must be in public. The Maram Shik writes, what does that mean to Farhesia? You know, there doesn't have to be 10 eyewitnesses of the relationship. They have to know about it. They have to know about it. So if you know there's a Jewish man living with a non-Jewish woman, we can't apply this halacha nowadays, of course. We can only apply them as Manah Mashiach, right? It's illegal. But if everything be all equal in theory, what the Farhesia means is that we assume, and this speaks volumes about intermarriage, if you think about it on a theoretical level, obviously we don't want to fulfill this practically, but on a theoretical level, the Torah is all halacha, that you can actually destroy this couple. There's no greater halacha, in my opinion, that speaks about assimilation. This halacha is not impossible. What more halacha can you find? So in the Maram Shik writes that 10 Jews don't have to necessarily be eyewitnesses to them living together as long as they know about it. There's knowledge of 10 people, this Jewish man is living with a non-Jewish woman. The halacha is tonight impossible. Oh. The other two cases of stealing the klisharis and the black magic do not require Bifar Hesia. Do not have to be done in a public forum. So there are basically two approaches that one can understand this halacha of Kenoyim Pogimbo, and that is, what is the reason why Pinchas is able to destroy them? Is it because the Maisa Aveira, the action of the Aveira, that caused them to be destroyed? Or no, is it the repercussions that emerge from their act of living together. It is the Chilul Hashem that emerges from this. And if it's because of the Chilul Hashem, maybe that's why Pinchas had a heter, had a permissibility to destroy them. So there are two different reasons why we could postulate why does our Lach of Kanarim Pogba. Is the action of the Aveira mandate this? Or no, is it the Totsah, the result of the Chilul Hashem that emerges from this terrible act, this heinous act, that would warrant them to be destroyed? What's the difference? There are many differences. Number one difference is the following. And that is that is there a warning needed to be issued before you go ahead, and try to destroy them? If you hold that it's a mice, this is a machlokes between the Rambam and the Raizen in Hilchos Isuri Biyah, in Pirik Yud Aleph, explicit machlokes. If you hold that it's a maisa aveira, the action of the sin mandated this, the only time you can know someone is the mazid is what? Yeah. Is doing it maliciously, is if you warn them before. What you're doing is prohibited, and we will destroy you. And afal pikein, they say, we don't care, we're going to do it. Then hasra is needed. If you say it's an issue of Chilul Hashem, which is result-oriented, then hasra has no place. So the Rambam never once mentions hasra. And the Ravid argues and says, if you want to do it ideally and be called a tzaddik for doing it, you must issue warning. If you do it without a warning, you had a permissibility, but you're not called a zaris. You're not called a person that's doing a mitzvah by doing this. That's the issue at hand. Is warning needed in order to invoke the din of Tanayim Pogabah? That's number one thing. Number two, we find. We mentioned that Kanoim Pogimbo is only in a situation where there are 10 Jews. What happens if a Jewish man lives with a non-Jewish woman privately? No one knows about it. No one knows about it. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, if it's in front of 10 Jews and no one killed them, so what's the punishment? You're given spiritual excision, midivre kabbalah. There's a chiyuv karis, midivre kabbalah. Mentioned in Navi, there's a chiyuv karis. If you live, bless you, if you live with a non-Jew, if a Jewish man lives with a non-Jewish woman, and no one killed them, Hashem takes care of them, it's mentioned in Navi. What happens if it was done privately? What happens if it was done privately? So the Chedushi Aran and Sanhedrin Pei Bezmav has a suffix. What is he in doubt about? If you assume it's a maisa aveira, the action mandates, we don't care if it's in public or private, so you should be punished by Hashem. But if it's an issue of Chilul Hashem is only if people know about it. So since people don't know about it, maybe you would not be given the key of cards for Divya Kabbalah. That's the second Nafkin meaning. First was warning. Second one was what? Second one was the issue of Kardesh B'Divya Kabbalah B'Tzina. Third one. And this brings it back to our Gemara. Fascinating case. Do we say Kinoyim Pogimbo in the reverse fashion? Jewish woman with a non-Jewish man. Jewish woman with a non-Jewish man. Would you say Kinoyim Pogimbo? Would you say Kinoyim Pogimbo? So according to the Ramban writes Halacha L'maisa the following. The Ramban writes no in the Mechamas Hashem. It works only in one direction. Meaning there's only a certain action or act of Aveira that allowed you to be destroyed. And that was a case of a non-Jewish man with a Jewish woman. And the theory being the children will be what? The children will be, in which case, with a Jewish man and non-Jewish woman, the children will be non-Jewish. So only that act of an Aveira will we be what? Will be considered to be a lach of Kanayim Pogabo. But in the reverse fashion, who says that you have the ability to destroy them? That's the Ramban. There is a Shulta Giburim in the fourth parak of Maseches Yevamos that quotes from Rabbi Avram HaGadol that argues. And what does Rabbi Avram HaGadol say? Rabbi Avram HaGadol postulates the following unbelievable chiddush. There was a couple. The husband died without any children. We know there is a halacha of yibum and chalitza. There has to be either yibum done or chalitza. The husband had one brother, and that one brother had become a bishop. He became a priest and a bishop. He wasn't interested at all in doing Hebrew. Could care less. What's a woman going to do now? He's not going to do Hebrew, not going to do Chalitza. She's going to be stuck her whole life as an aguna. So you know what Rabbi Avraham Gadol said? No, the husband died, and he had a brother. Right, they're a Jewish couple.
Became
a bishop. So he wasn't interested in doing Yibu Chalitza. So what are you going to do?
Can you really become converted halakhically?
Oh, so there, you know what Rabbi Avraham Gadol says? He says this woman is free to get remarried to whoever she wants. You know why? Now, we don't postulate like this. But he says, since he became a mumar and a priest and a bishop, we would never allow the brother-in-law to live with what? His sister-in-law to do Yibum. You know what he says? Kinoyim pogim bo. Unbelievable. Means because he became a bishop, he lost his Kedushas Yisrael, which we don't postulate. We mentioned last week, Afal Pishachot Yisraelu, no matter what a Jew does, you don't lose your Kedushas Yisrael. But he assumed not that way. Not only that, the second Kiddush is, Kiddush Agabe Kiddush, that it set up a scenario, you say Kinoyim Pogibo with a Jewish man, sorry, with a non-Jewish man and a Jewish woman. In the Chumash, it's only the other way. You see from a brother Gadol, and the Moshe Feinstein Zatzal points out that Tosin Yevamos on Tet Zayin and the Beis also seems to say like this. We say Kinoyim Pogibo in both directions. Why? Because a Chilul Hashem is what's involved here. Assimilation. Intermarriage. Who cares what direction it is? And therefore, in this situation, it's an issue of Kinoyim Pogim Bo. Our Gemara is not that problem, because why? They're not going to do it willingly. If they would do it willingly, and you would assume like a Rama Gadol, then it would be a problem of Kinoyim Pogim Bo. But here, the Chachamim recommended that they should do it the what? They should do it the onus. If they're doing it under duress, that's not going to be Kinoyim Pogim Bo. We're talking about a situation where willingly they're living together. Yeah, go ahead.
So under that situation, Mara Mashiach, you have a non-Jew married to a Jewish woman, according to one Shilke Yiborim, or according to the Shita, you have the two of them living together with a child, so it's obviously the Parhesia that they're in a relationship.
Right.
You would have a plea to kill that kid's father.
Well, we wouldn't want to run to do it. We would encourage them, please convert, you know, I mean, we're not the bloodthirsty people. We shy away from killing, you know. Jewish people are...
By virtue of the fact that there is a child, you would have to draw the conclusion that they are living together.
Right, so we would encourage them, you know, convert, please. You know what I'm saying? We would converge. We don't, you know, we're not bloodthirsty type of people, but we never want to, we're very shy to carry out this din. In fact, Yushalmi writes, and that's a fourth point, let's make. Yushalmi writes, the Chumim wanted to put Pinchas in excommunication. They wanted to put him in Cherem for what he had done. And then Hashem came down to Nebu and said what he did was correct. Now, that's what the Yushalmi writes. Now, the Rambam in the Arach HaZaka says that if you are Kinoyim Pogibo, you're doing a great thing, you're doing a great mitzvah. So there are two really, either it's just a permissibility, which is like, it's a terrible Chil Hashem, so you have a permissibility to stop it. But not per se you get great points in Shemayim. But the other perspective is, if you treat it like a Maisa Aveira, it's like you are executing, it's like you're a Shliach Beis Din. It's like you're acting on behalf of Beis Din, and when Beis Din executes someone, they get a mitzvah. Ubiyar Tahara, Mikir Becha. So if you view Kinoyim Pogim Bo, not that you're stopping a Chil Hashem, which you could view as a what? As only a permissibility, but if you view it as like an action of an Aveira that mandates you to be executed, then that can be considered to be what? A great mitzvah. It's like you're a Shliach Beis Din. So that would be a fourth point. Number one, we said was warning. Number two, we said given the spiritual excision in private, key of Kars. Number three, we said, does it work in the reverse way? A non-Jewish man with a Jewish woman. Number four, is it a permissibility or is it a mitzvah? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, that's what we said. We said the Mishnah. We said that Mishnah, right, but no, because Boel HaRamis, no, because the Boel HaRamis might work the other way also. Non-Jewish man with a Jewish woman. Boel HaRamis could also be equivalent in the other way. I understand, that's the stunning Kiddush of Avraham HaGadol. It's an unbelievable Kiddush. That's what he writes. It's a chiddush agabe chiddush. Because number one, you're assuming the guy's a non-Jew. He really is Jewish. Yeah, go ahead, Akiva.
If you hold
right.
Would you also say the nine children bowl in the reverse? Or you would never get to that?
You mean if you hold, like Rabbeinu Tam, that Bias Akum is Kibias of Behema? So you have a non-Jewish man with a Jewish woman. Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, if you're doing it willingly.
The woman's doing it willingly.
Yeah, if they're doing it willingly and they're doing it in public, I mean, do you want to say, according to Rabbeinu Tam, you know, it shouldn't even be called a Maisa Avera. Certainly from the respect of Kol Hashem, you can understand it.
Right.
Even though it's
being asked to the Gemara, we can prove so.
Yeah, that what they're going to be doing.
If they did it for us, then we have a case of Kanai Pogam.
Right, and you're saying because of that halacha, that's why you'd have to kill them. That's interesting. Interesting suggestion. Very nice. In other words, that's a new halacha of Kanai Pogam. That's only if you assume you say it in this reverse way, which is a stunning Kiddush. I hear you. Very good. That could be. It could be. But that's only to take the perspective of Chil Hashem. Absolutely. Yeah, go ahead.
If you're taking the perspective of Chil Hashem and you Masad Chil Hashem,
yes.
Why are you allowed to kill both of them? Just only one of them should be enough. If it's a Zemeira, then they're both trying to do their own. You've got to kill them.
Well, Chil Hashem. If it's a Chil Hashem, they're both engaged in a Chil Hashem. Why shouldn't it be both?
If it's only one of them,
huh?
You stop them, there'll be no more Chil Hashem.
Right. Right.
You don't kill one of them.
You're asking if you only kill one of them, are you not fulfilling the mitzvah properly?
But if you certainly
have to kill the Jewish person, that's for sure. Boil our law that you have to kill Zuri. Happening to them is end up killing them both. But I think what the Mishnah is saying is you have to kill the Jewish man who's doing this horrible. Boil our law. He ended up killing both, okay. But the Mike says, you ended up killing only the Jewish man, he still was doing something correct.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's not like you have to kill both, and the other is doing it incorrectly.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
So my answer in time, and the answer is time to Olam?
Yes.
So that's the one that's kind of going to go in the reverse.
Well, we're assuming that, again, what we're assuming is that you have to assume the skittish. Pasuk Shad is you don't say Kanar and Pogobo in the other way. So, first of all, doesn't get off the ground, but if you...
How can you say that? It would be against the Gemara by Esther.
Why is that?
Well, we'll get
to that next week, because Karka Olam, we'll have to see, could be that if the woman plays a totally passive role... I'm sorry?
Then
there's no Kol Hashem. If she plays an active role, then you would say Kol Hashem. Absolutely. That would depend, that's the subject topic we'll have to see next week. How Karka Olam... Yeah, go ahead.
This is sort of back, like, the chief question. I mean, aren't you... If you are killing someone, isn't it because they've already committed the act of Kol Hashem and not because you're concerned about them continuing to commit Kol Hashem in the future? Or is it not? Or is it both?
It's the Chil Hashem of what's happening right now. It's such a terrible crime what they're doing. You have to stop it and terminate it right there. So it's not it is because perhaps, like you're saying, it might be the repercussions that other people might learn from it and say it's okay. You're right.
It may also be because of the continuation to do it unless you stop it.
Right, that could be also, yes. That's what we mean by repercussions. Not per se the act itself, it's what is going to emerge from the actual Maisa Avera. Absolutely.
It could be for what they're making continue to do the future.
Right. Okay. One more din that we should mention regarding Kanai and Pogobo, and this is, I believe, the fifth halach, because we mentioned the warning, we mentioned the spiritual excision, we mentioned reverse, we mentioned whether it's permissibility or a mitzvah, and there is a fifth din that we should mention. There is a halacha called Kimlei Bidarabimine. Now, what does Kimlei Bidarabimine mean? Fascinating din also. The Gemara has later on in Sukkos. What is this fascinating din? If a person doesn't act in Avera, and that act engenders two punishments, one a severe punishment, and one a what? One a lesser punishment. For example, let's say, while I am going to turn the switch of the light on Shabbos, while I go to turn the light on Shabbos, I rip someone's shirt. I rip my friend's shirt. Michal Shabbos is a chiyuv skila with Adam and Hasra, with warning and witnesses, and I'm incurring a damage to my friend's shirt. Financial damage. The Gemara tells us we only give one punishment out. the more severe one. Okay. Now, the question is, and that's a whole different topic on its own without us getting involved in that now, but let's say while Kinoyim Pogimbo is going on, a person incurs financial damage to someone. He damages someone. While the Jewish man is living with the non-Jewish woman, he damages someone. So with the same action, let's say, okay, he incurs a he hurts someone financially. He could have been killed by someone like Pinchas killing Zimri, and therefore that exempts him from the financial obligation. So there is a machlokus between Rabbi Akiva Eger and the Hafla in the beginning of the third parak of Maseches Ksubos. Do we say you're exempt from the financial obligation, or do we say you must pay both? Depends on this question. If you view Kinoyim Pogimbo as a real Maisa Aveira, the action of the sin mandates you to be destroyed, and Beis Din really should destroy you, and the person that destroys you on the street is like an agent of Beis Din, he's like a shliach Beis Din, then in reality you could have been executed like a Mises Beis Din. And therefore what? When you incur a physical or a financial damage to someone, you are exempt. Or no, if you view Kinoyim Pogimbo as a Chil Hashem oriented type of sin, and therefore that's the reason why you're going to be destroyed. So on something that is only Chil Hashem oriented, which is result oriented, repercussion oriented, so therefore in such a case you will not be exempt from financial matters, because it doesn't fit the model of my turning the light on. Because my turning the light on Shabbos, I'm executed by Beis Din. That's why I don't have to what? That's why I don't have to pay for the shirt. But in the case of Kinoyim Pogimbo, it's not an issue of Beis Din. It's an issue of a terrible Chil Hashem happening, and a guy in the street can stop it. And a guy in the street can stop it. And therefore, it's not going to be modeled at all after the case of turning on the light on Shabbos and ripping someone's shirt. But that goes to the heart and core of how you view Kinoyim Pogimbo. How you view Kinoyim Pogimbo is either as action or oriented, the Maisa Aveira mandates you to be destroyed, or no, it's a Chil Hashem, and therefore it's not considered to be at all like a mitzvah, it's just a permissibility. Oh, that's a great question. There's why? Excellent. If that's considered to be a Maisa Beis Din, if it's considered to be a Maisa Aveira, why did the Gemara say that if Zimri would have turned around and killed Pinchas, he was okay? Because Pinchas was a rodent. Why though? Wasn't Pinchas like a Shliach Beis Din? You know what I would respond? Pinchas did not issue a warning. If he would have issued a warning, then he's like a what? Then he's like a Shliach Beis Din. That's what the Yad Ramah writes, the Feirush in Sanhedrin. If he issued a warning, then he had no right to come back and what? Kill him. He would not be considered to be permissible to go ahead and turn around and kill Pinchas. Where you don't issue a warning, then you're stopping a Chil Hashem, and then the stakes are high, you're gambling. In a sense, he can defend himself. But if you issue a warning, it's like you're a Shliach Beis Din. So that would be the answer. Okay. Now, the latter two cases of stealing the Klisharis, and also Makalo Bekosen, those latter two cases are different than Baal HaRamis. Explicitly, the Miri points out two distinctions. Number one, it does not have to be done to Farhesia. If I feel someone see the Klisharis and I'm the only guy who sees it, I can still kill him. Number one, like if I see someone cursing someone with black magic, I'm the only one who sees it, you can also invoke Kinoyim Pogimbo. This is all in theory. We can't practically fulfill this nowadays. Those latter two do not need the Farhesia, because those latter two are not Chil Hashem oriented. Those latter two are Maisa Aveira oriented. And there's one other distinction the Miri points out. If the fellow that's stealing the Klisharis or is cursing someone's black magic wants to defend himself, and he sees that I'm about to shoot him, and he shoots me back, he's Chayiv Misa, because I am considered to be a Shliach Beis Din no matter what when it comes to those last two cases. So the Miri makes a very interesting distinction. By Baal HaRamis, a Jewish man living with a non-Jewish woman, that he says is Chil Hashem oriented. Whereas going to this Akisva, stealing the Klisharis, Makal B'Kosher, those are Maisa Aveira oriented. Therefore, they don't need to be front of the 10 Jews. And number two, he has no right to defend himself by shooting me back. And if he does, he'll be chayiv nisa. That it would follow your right. There should need to be a warning, but the Meiri doesn't say it. That's an excellent point too. The Meiri should have. He doesn't say it though. It's a special, but these are all special halakha l'moshe misinai. Remember, we said there are five ways to learn how to din d'oraisa. One of them is halakha l'moshe misinai. Halakha l'moshe misinai. Hashem taught Moshe Rabbeinu. In these three cases, you have the ability to destroy them on the spot if you see them doing it. Okay. I can't hear. Yeah.
So what do you?
Why not? That's the nature of the halakha l'moshe misinai. Why? Watch, that's the nature of the halakha l'moshe misinai. That's what the Miri wants to say. Okay. One last din, and then we'll close with the Dvar Torah from Chumash. There is a Gemara that Tosfos points out. I wanted you to see if it was possible that the second Tosfos letter is Ludon Ashari. The way Tosfos says this is remarkable. Rabban Soloveitchik has chassidically brought has said a beautiful mahalach to understand this Tosfos. Tosfos seems to say the way he learns the Gemara. The way he learns the Gemara, it seems to be the following. Is that why did not the Chachamim, it's an amazing thing, why did the Chachamim not protest? Why did the Chachamim not protest and say, Jewish women that you've never been married before, why are you foregoing and not getting married on Wednesday? Our takana was to get married on Wednesday if you've never been married before. Abasuwa. Why are you getting married on Tuesday, as we read the Gemara last week? Why are you foregoing our takana? Just fulfill our takana, and if you have to live with the Roman general, live with them under duress. That's the way Tosfos learns the Gemara's question. It's crazy. The Shita Mekubetzis already asks, the Chachamim are so interested in their takana, they're willing to have the Jewish women live with Roman general under duress? Nuts. The Shita Mekubetzis says, Dover Tameru, that the Chachamim are so interested in their takana, they're willing to advocate, live with the Roman general bonus. Rashi learns the Gemara's question completely different. Rashi learns the Gemara's question, he had nothing to do with that. That the Gemara should have said, instead of the notion of legislu onus, it should have used the Lashon of, instead of misakana ve'elech, it should have said mina onus ve'elech. It's a terminology question Rashi learned. But Tosfos learns the question actually like this. Crazy. No? Well, rabbis are good fellows, right? They would never advocate this. It's unbelievable. That's what Rabban said to us. It's a pell of this, the way Tosfos learns the kasha. So this is what Rabban said, a beautiful chiddush. Rabban said like this. Rabban said, there's a sheet in the Gubetz in the second parak that says, 90% of the time, the Roman generals would not live with the Jewish women. Only 10% of the time. That's what he writes. That was the facts. Shita Mekubetzis says. Therefore, Tosfos writes and he postulates, how do we view the notion of Gilui Arayos? We know when it comes to death, life and death situations, the Rambam writes that we're very, very concerned even about the minority. 10% chance. We're cautious for Sakana. Sakana is always a very, very serious concept. We're very, very conscious of Sakana, even if it's a minority situation. Sofik Bikuch Nefesh. So the question was, how do you treat Gilui Arayos? Do you treat Gilui Arayos equivalent as a life and death situation? Because we said the Shita Mekubetzis that only happens 10% of the time. So if it only happens 10% of the time, so are we concerned for that? Do we treat it like a life and death situation? So Rashi and Tosfos are arguing on this exact point. Tosfos says, no, we're not concerned. And therefore Tosfos says, we advocate, let them live bonus because it's never going to happen. It happens only 10% of the time. And let them fulfill the takan on Wednesday. Rashi stands on his head and says, no way. We treat the Gilui Arayos like the Ritzicha, And therefore, we never would advocate that because it might happen, even though it's 10% of the time. And therefore, Rashi stands on his head and says, no, that cannot be the pshat in the Gemara. Rather, the Gemara was just asking, why did it say Misakana Veilach? It should have said Mionis Veilach. But the Gemara never would say that they were advocating them to live under duress with the Roman general, even though it might only happen 10% of the time. So it's a very conceptual dispute, the way Rabban Soloveitchik and Falkenberg explained it, how to understand the discussion. Not conscious from the Chum would advocate it. But since it was a slight chance to happen, Chum would say, don't let our Takana go in the wastebasket because of that 5% of the time. Do you treat you, Elias, like with Sikha, we're being concerned about this halakha l'maaseh? Okay. All right, let's close with the Dvar Torah from Chumash. And then we'll continue. There's much more we have to talk about with the Gimel of Erez. We got the most of what we talk about. Next week, we're going to talk about the passive-active role with Achashverosh and Esther and a very fascinating Reb Chaim. And I'll give you the Mara Makomos about the notion of active and passive roles, both in Ritzich and murder and in Givya Arias, from the man's perspective and the woman's perspective as well. We have in Parshas Vayigash a very interesting discussion where the truth is, Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda comes and says that there has to be some type of reconciliation. And the truth of the matter is, you get the impression from the Psukim that Yosef HaTzadik forgave his brothers. And it seems to be they were concerned Yosef was going to punish them and destroy them. That doesn't happen. But the Rabbeinu Bachaye writes that he never forgave them explicitly. In fact, by the fact that Torah never mentions it, claims Rabbeinu Bachaye he never forgave them. And Yosef was a tzaddik, he's a human being, but what they did to him was so terrible, it was something that was unforgivable. Because he did not grant them mechila, Rabbeinu Bachai says, this was linked years later to the Asara Harugi Malchus that we say on Yom Kippur, in the liturgy on Yom Kippur, and on Tisha B'Av in the Kinos. Because the 10 Asara Harugi Malchus were connected to 10 brothers that were involved in the sale of Yosef because Binyamin wasn't involved. And because there was no mechila granted, that was the notion of the Asara Harugi Malchus. And I think we can learn a tremendous lesson from this. This does not impinge upon the notion of Yosef being a tzaddik, but we have to understand that Yosef was a human being. And there are certain things that perhaps, maybe, we strive never to be like this. Like the Ramah writes in Hilchos Yom Kippur. Very important thing. You know, we always, if someone insults someone or hurts someone, we never, God forbid, want to ever insult someone. But if we did, you're supposed to ask forgiveness from that person, and it should be even three times. You should ask even three times. In fact, there's a machlokes in the Torah and that you have to ask four times. The first time, maybe you can ask alone with no one there. And then the next three times, you have to bring three people. Some say you only have to ask three times, but every time you have to bring three people. So machlokes Torah and the Rambam, the Bira Lava quotes. But the Ramah writes, if someone defames someone's reputation, and he said Lashon Hara, but it damaged the person's reputation, so the Ramah writes, you do not have to grant mechila, even after three times. But then the Mishnah Berurah writes, it's a midah of hanava, humility, that even in that case you should grant humility. You should grant forgiveness, rather. The midah of hanava, humility, that you should grant forgiveness. But the truth of the matter is that what I think Rabbeinu Bachaye is bringing out is that Yosef HaTzadik was a human being. And what they had, maybe they didn't ask him enough. Could be they didn't ask him enough. And they certainly what? Affected his whole life. I mean, obviously he still remained strong in Mitzrayim where there was a void of Torah. He married a Jewish woman. He married Bashtinus as the Dashkin and Balantosos. He was able to build up a whole family and keep strong to Torah and Mitzvahs. But it affected his whole life. Perhaps they didn't ask enough. And because of that, on one hand, we felt the fact that he didn't grant Mechila, the Asara Harugi Malchus. But on the other hand, we call him Yosef HaTzadik. So we have to try to remember that in our relationships with the people that we strive, that if we hurt someone, God forbid, we try to ask for forgiveness. But on the other hand, that we have to understand that a person has to be human, and maybe after the first time he cannot grant the mechila. Maybe they didn't ask him enough, or maybe they didn't ask him specifically enough. And therefore, Rabbeinu Bachaye writes that Yosef HaTzadik did not really ever grant the mechila. So we strive never to be in those situations, and we should always strive to be to give mechila. But on the other hand, we have to understand the others to learn from them. We're human beings, and according to Shlach HaKodesh, Yosef was an Av too. There were four of us. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and also Yosef HaTzadik. Okay, everyone have a good Shabbos.